Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Thomas Halliday, the author of the new book, Otherlands, A Journey Through Earth's Extinct Worlds. Thomas is a paleontologist and an evolutionary biologist. We go now to some part of human history that is present in the 20th century, a very famous movie called Jurassic Park. Well, we're going to the real Jurassic, 155 million years ago. This is a time that Thomas reports was time for recovery from an extinction event that happened some 50 million years before, the Triassic-Jurassic extinction. We're now in a piece of land that we think of as Germany today, Swabia, Germany. And why this is all important is that we're looking at the recovery from what I presume was a climate change extinction. Is that correct, Thomas? Is that the thinking about what happened?
The Triassic-Jurassic extinction is one of the most hotly debated extinctions in terms of cause, but the leading candidate for this is that is runaway climate change, because we appear to have had a sort of emission of sulfur dioxide, carbon dioxide, all of these sorts of gases that warmed the atmosphere and acidified the oceans. And so when I'm talking about this as a time of recovery, what it's particularly a time of recovery for is marine reptiles, which are almost the classic organisms from the Jurassic. The Jurassic of Europe, which is, of course, where we are in Germany, is a time when Europe is a tropical archipelago, rather like the Caribbean is today. It's at the meeting point of three oceans. So you've got the cold boreal ocean up in the north. You've got the Atlantic Passage just beginning to open to the west, and then the Tethys Ocean to the east. And marine reptiles like ichthyosaurs, like plesiosaurs, these are some of the first organisms that scientists began to notice and realize that there were forms that had existed in the past that aren't around today. I mean, all of the wonderful work of Mary Anning on the south coast of England and the classic Jurassic coast is based on this kind of European archipelago ecosystem. And so that's what I wanted to explore here, but particularly looking at this reef built out of the remains of glass sponges. The largest biological structure ever to exist was this reef of glass sponges stretching from what is now Oklahoma in the west all the way into modern Europe.
Yes, we're leaving the dinosaurs, which are romantic creatures, and we're going to sponges, which are a very vital part of creation over the last 500 million years, I learned from Thomas. And these sponges are in, is this the Tethys Sea? Is that what it's formally now known 155 million years ago, the one that spanned the globe?
It's the fringes of the Tethys Sea, which is sort of the forerunner of both the Mediterranean and also bits of the Indian Ocean. I guess it's the ocean that separates Africa from Europe and Asia, more or less. And as Africa has come north, a lot of that has been closed off.
I see. So the sponges are in the Tethys. Is this right? 7,000 kilometers of a silicon sponge? Did I write that down correctly? Did I scramble?
Yeah, 7,000 kilometer long reef made up of these sponges growing on top of one another.
And how did that contribute? Was it part of the food stuff of larger creatures? Was it a creature itself? Do we think of it as one large entity?
Oh, well, it's not one large entity. I mean, it's a reef in the sense that coral reefs are reefs. Both of those are made up of lots of animals that are then growing on top of each other. And although sponges are relatively simple animals from a tissue point of view, they are nonetheless, you know, they're filtering the sea, getting all the sort of nutrition out of it, and providing homes for all sorts of other creatures to live in. I mean, other classical sort of paleontological creatures of the Jurassic are, you know, ammonites and so, you know, these. So it'll And these will also support fish and will be supporting the marine reptiles at the top of the food chain and sharks and so on. So it's a very diverse marine ecosystem. But the organisms that have created reefs over geological time have changed. I mean, there used to be that rudest clams made reefs, and that doesn't really happen anymore. And it used to be that these glass sponges made reefs, and that doesn't really happen anymore, except that it's beginning to happen maybe again at the moment in the waters of British Columbia. And today, coral are the main reef builders around the world. But it's sort of indicative that although you get different organisms performing the same roles, you get these patterns emerging again and again over Earth history.
Now, this is the time, Thomas and I were speaking of, when did wood not deteriorate when it was floating? This is the time that wood floated longer than it does today. Why so, Thomas?
Well, today, one of the main problems for any wood that's floating in the ocean are these wood-boring worms. And they're known as shipworms because they were absolutely the bane of sailors in the time when ships were largely made out of wood. And they bore holes through the bark, which allows water in to waterlog any sort of fallen floating log, and that means that it rots and it sinks very quickly. But in the Jurassic, shipworms had not yet evolved, and we have fossil evidence of logs that had floated through the oceans and had several different types of organism attaching to them. And probably the most sort of charismatic of these are what we call sea lilies, which are these stalked relatives of starfish. There are still sea lilies around today, but they don't float on, they don't attach to floating logs. But back in the Jurassic, you have things like Saccharinus, which have these extraordinarily long, several meter long stalks, and they filter out the sea with these kind of handkerchief like fingers. And just these beautiful organisms, and especially in the site which is called Holzmaden, which is, I think, a little bit older than the site of the chapter that I'm discussing, there are logs of these fallen conifers, which are, you know, 10, 12 meters long and just adorned with this sort of bouquet of sea lilies.
We go now to 225 million years ago. This is the Triassic, and it at first struck me as sad because it's before birds, but there was the wind and there were insects, and it's before flowers, but there were conifers. What is significant here is beetles. There's so many beetles. I don't think we know how many beetles there are, but at this point you report there were 166 families, 96 of which were in Madigan. Where is Madigan?
Yeah, Madigan is it is in a valley today in the Fergana Basin in the middle of Kyrgyzstan. So we're talking Central Asia. And indeed, at the time, it was actually in a very similar kind of environment. It was part of this sort of series of parallel valleys which descended again to a lake. And it's a very rare example of a terrestrial ecosystem at that time. So one of the big biases in the fossil record is that in order for something to fossilize, you need some kind of silt or sediment or mud being deposited. And that only really happens either in deserts with sand dunes or in the water. And so the record of mountainous ecosystems where sediment tends to be eroded away rather than deposited is just vanishingly small. It's a huge bias. So Madigan is this wonderfully preserved lake ecosystem from the mountains in the Triassic 225 million years ago. And yes, you're right. I mean, the insect diversity there is extraordinary. We have recovered most of the known Triassic families of insects from this one locality. They're found elsewhere as well, but several of them are unique to this site. And the vertebrates there are absolutely unique. There's my favorite organism in the book, just about, is an organism called Charivipteryx, which is this lizard-like organism. So if you imagine some sort of a wall-climbing lizard with extraordinarily long legs, then you've got a relatively good mental picture of it. It's actually probably more closely related to things like dinosaurs and crocodiles and birds and so on than it is to modern lizards, but ecologically very similar. However, with these extraordinarily long legs, it has a membrane that stretches between them, and it uses this to glide. So unlike most modern gliders, you know, you might think of a flying squirrel, which stretches out all four limbs and holds this sort of parachute between them. It is only really gliding on this a triangle triangular wing structure formed of its hind legs. Extraordinary creature that there is only one known specimen ever been found, and it's been found in Madigan. So it's a phenomenal sight which deserves better recognition.
I'm speaking with Thomas Halliday, paleontologist. The book is Other Lands, Extinct Worlds That Are Earth. And we're headed farther back in time. Now we go from the Triassic to the Permian, 253 million years ago. And one of my favorite creatures, the Buenos Tegos, an apex predator. Thomas will introduce us. I'm John Batchelor.